Soul Talk is a podcast dedicated to making space for Latinx storytellers and content creators across all media to chat about their art, experiences, and culture. As a branch of the Soul Project, Soul Talk welcomes you to the Green Room.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Soul Talk. My name is Joey Reyes. My pronouns are they, them, and I am the associate producer at the Soul Project. And as always, I'm here with...
Hi, I'm David Mendizalf. I'm the associate artistic director of the Soul Project. I use he or they pronouns, and I'm so delighted to be here for another episode of Soul Talk, interviewing a dear friend and brilliant artist, actor, writer, producer, does it all, sweetheart, badass.
Just,
yes. Dominic Colon. So yeah.
Yes, Dominic Colon. I'm gonna share with you all a brief hint of his awesomeness. Dominic Colon is an award-winning writer and actor from the Bronx. Recent plays include Prospect Avenue or The Miseducation of Junie Rodriguez at Rattlestick Playwrights Theater. Colon's play, The War I Know, has been developed by the Latinx Playwrights Circle, Labyrinth Theater Company, as part of their 2021 Barn Series, and Soulfest, last year's Soulfest. Colon's short play, Where Are Angels, was a recipient of the 2021 Latinx Playwrights Circle and Pregones PRTT Greater Good Commission. Selected directing credits include The War I Know with Labyrinth, Eduardo Machado's Marquitas at Rattlestick Playwrights Theater as part of their Pride Plays Festival, and episodes 4 through 6 of the MTA Radio Plays, also with Rattlestick Playwrights Theater. Colon's half-hour television pilot, Papi, made the inaugural Latinx TV list, a curated list of the 10 most promising pilots created by Latinx writers. Colon was recently selected to be a part of the inaugural cohort of the Sundance Uprise Grant, and is currently a staff writer on the upcoming Netflix series, Pink Marine, which he talks about in today's interview a little bit. And most recently, he is the inaugural recipient of the Write It Out Prize for Playwrights Living with HIV for his play, The War I Know. And this prize is contributed in partnership by Danye Love and National Queer Theater with support from Billy Porter and GLAAD. Wow, yes, so many things.
Such an incredible artist and such an incredible year he's been having, and such an incredible program, truly. Danye Love's Write It Out program, and it was thrilling when that announcement came out that Dominic was winning for The War I Know, which is part of a trilogy, which he'll talk a little bit more about today. It's just, you know, always thrilling when wonderful things happen to wonderful people. And Dominic and I were part of this. We talked a little bit about it. We were part of this sort of gaggle at the beginning of the pandemic. It was a bunch of queer Latinos who we called ourselves a little flamboyante, and we would gather on Wednesday evenings, and it was just real community building. And that's something that I think about Dominic a lot, is like such a community builder in his work, and is a part of so many groups, and really is the kind of bridge that has brought together so many different artists. And if you talk to any of, you know, Latinx artists here in New York, you know, everyone knows Dominic and just has so much love for him. So it's thrilling to get to be able to chat with him today.
Yes. Oh, yay. I can't wait. Thank you all so much for listening. And we will be right back with Dominic Colon. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. We are here with our beautiful guest, Dominic Colon. Dominic, how are you?
Hey, y'all. I'm good. I'm good. You know, living life. I'm blessed, highly favored, all that stuff.
It's been a big year for you. I mean, a big couple of years. You know, during this pandemic, I think, you know, there was that whole meme that was like, Shakespeare wrote whatever fucking play he wrote during the pandemic. Like, go do that. And everyone... whatever. And everyone was like, well, I have to go do stuff, you know, and a lot of growth, obviously a lot of care. Some people did nothing, which was okay if you did nothing, but you had a really incredible year. I mean, you got to writing and you said, you know what, like, I'm going to put the pen to paper. I'm going to put my fingers to the keyboard and I'm going to tell some stories. And you've been doing that actually your whole career. Like, I mean, I've been following your whole career and you've always been writing, you've always been creating stories, but I'm curious, what in this time maybe made you feel like you needed to dive in even deeper into that process?
You know, I think it was a bunch of things. I think one, we had the time. And I had a very, like everyone, had a very rough couple months, first couple months in the pandemic as we were trying to figure stuff out. I remember March through May was just like, oh, what the hell is going on with my life? And we don't know. And I realized very quickly that this wasn't going to go anywhere. And not only was it not going to go anywhere, we would never have this time again. I was like, I am going to make the choice to experience and make the most out of this brand new situation. And because we're always complaining about time, that at least I was, you know, auditions, teaching, this, that, you know, going to four different boroughs in one day. And it was just like, I'm home and I have the opportunity. And, you know, I did it as, you know, I'm a big, you know, proponent on like working on the self. And I was gifted a Reiki session, a distance Reiki session on May 1st. And I'm a Taurus, and so it was for my birthday, but I was like, I'm gonna start May and we're gonna heal and we're gonna do this, and we're gonna remove energy and all this stuff. Now prior to that, a very dear friend of mine, you all know, Sean Carvajal, I had been talking to him about this idea that had been living in my head about for this play, which was loosely based on my experience as a young kid growing up in the Bronx and the narrative of HIV, and coming of age as a gay man in a time where like being gay meant like, or at least the media spun it that, you know, you will be HIV positive. And I had told him this big story about like, you know, my childhood and how a lot of the language at the beginning of COVID felt very reminiscent of the language that was being used when I was a kid around HIV. And May 1st, I do my Reiki session. Oh shit, my bad. Before that, after, he was like, yo, well, you gotta work on that play, do that play. And like, he's like, I'll bring it to Labyrinth and, you know, maybe you can be in the intensive and da da da, boom. I'm a procrastinator. In addition to a professional writing career and acting career, I'm also a professional procrastinator.
Yes.
So 2 months later, May 1st happens. I do my Reiki session. 15 minutes later, Sean called me. He's like, where's your play? He's like, oh, it got to be submitted in like 2 weeks, whatever, whatever. He's like, you got 2 weeks. I didn't have a page. May 14th, I handed him a first act. And we did a reading and he was like, you know, well, we did the reading was of the first act and was like, damn, this fucking shit is great. Couple weeks, you know, a month later, whatever, got in, I wrote the second act. We did the intensive, we did the barn. And, you know, we did a bunch of other stuff with the Latinx Playwright Circle, now Soul Fest. And it's, yeah, and I just won the inaugural Write It Out Prize.
Yes.
Billy Porter and GLAAD sponsored. And yeah, so that has on the theater side, that has, you know, been my baby, and that is part one of a trilogy.
And just for folks who don't know, who have not gotten hip to it, you're speaking about The War I Know, which is the play.
The War I Know. Yeah, so no, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I better.
No, this is great. I just want people to track. Yeah, and it's part of a trilogy.
It is part of a trilogy. So that it's currently being developed, and I got this commission for the greater good through Pregones and PRTT for gay Latine. let me get the accent right. Well, the girls come for me. Latine playwrights. And I wrote a short play, but that short play is actually will be the first scene of the third play. So on the theater front, I've been doing that, and on the film, TV stuff, it all kind of, I mean, you want to talk about just alignment. Like, like you said, David, you know, I've been putting in the work for a while. And on the film TV front, during the pandemic, well, prior to the pandemic, right before it happened, I submitted to this competition for Latinx TV writers through the organization of the Blacklist. Blacklist is Hollywood. I don't even know what to call it. Like, it's like a script. Every year they produce they put a list of the 10 best unproduced scripts in Hollywood. Like Queen Slim was on it. So like, it's like prestigious and shit. So like occasionally they'll do like different variations of the list. And this was the Latinx TV list. So I had a project on there. And then the visibility from there just really, like I didn't have an agent before on the literary side. And that was just like, and then shit started changing. And yeah, I've been developing a lot on the TV side, and I'm writing on a new TV show for Netflix called Pink Marine. And that's produced by Norman Lear. It's super exciting. And we're in the midst of that right now.
It's amazing.
So yeah, I'm just working. Thank you.
It's amazing. Yeah, really, congratulations. And
thank you.
You know, you're an artist who I think so many of us have been looking up to and following. Your career, your trajectory as an actor from The Electric Company to your short films that you were making, and so much of your career, I think, you know, has been about not waiting, you know, and saying like, I have, like, again, like I have stories to tell, and I'm gonna put myself out there. And so I just think alignment and congratulations, and you know, you might be procrastinating, but the universe is catching up to you.
I love that word.
So it's beautiful. Yeah, I'm curious, you know, talking about sort of navigating TV, film, and then theater, you know, having started off in theater as an actor and a writer, you say that this is your first play, The War I Know. What would you say,
full length play.
What would you say are like things that you're learning now as you're sort of venturing even more into like working in a writer's room and stuff? Like, what are the differences really for folks in terms of writing for theater, writing for film? Where do you see the crossover or the limits of either?
I try not to think of things as limits. I feel like everything has been setting me up for the place that I've been now. Like prior, like I was always an actor, but for a long time I ran a company, a theater company that did HIV prevention through theater. So that is where I realized the impact that theater can have for social change. Like we would perform in like after school programs and juvenile detention centers. And in addition to that, so I was running that, but then I was also, at first, a guest artist for Manhattan Theater Club, where I would be asked to perform plays written by young people. And this was way better, this was 20 years ago. So I was such a good actor that I would get asked to perform a lot, like to read the work a lot of, so I would teach. I would sit in the back and watch Migdalia Cruz and Candido Tirado and like, you know, all of these Judy Tate, like just teach playwriting. So I learned how to write plays by watching them in the back of the class, by hearing them teach playwriting. And then I brought that into my work. You know, story, good story is always important. Dialogue is always important. Structure is always important. That translates, you know, different types of structure, but it's all essentially the same thing when you learn it. Like you can learn structure. You can, I mean, for me, like the humanity, you know, in writing, the nuance of these, you know, stories that are important to me, the fact that I can, you know, bring it into the theater and bring it into TV is a privilege. And in terms of like what's difficult or whatever, I think, you know, getting that first door open even now, that's one of the things I'm learning.
Yeah.
That, like, as we kind of navigate, you know, like getting a you know, readings are fierce. But, you know, getting that production, like, wanting to get the production, you know what I'm saying? Having to navigate that and, like, the teams. And also, you know, especially in regards to theater, doing it within the context of a global pandemic. Like, that's been the crazy thing. So I'm grateful that I'm always going to tussle. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have that, you know. So it's just managing to know that it's going to work out when it needs to work out. I got two other, you know, plays to write in the trilogy. I'm going to do that. And, you know, and I'm going to, you know, work on this show and develop this film and so whatever it is, I'm always going to work. So it's just, I think, you know, giving myself grace to be gentle with myself when I'm tired, when I want to procrastinate, because at the end of the day, this is a responsibility, I feel. Like, I think, you know, we as artists have the power to really, you know, shape culture, to move the needle forward, and to change lives and make lives better. And I think that is always at the core of what I do. And I will do that in film, TV, or anything. You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did that answer the question?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think also just what something, you know, that I'm hearing a lot of too is a real sense of community also, and that community has been such a huge support. You know, just hearing you talk about folks like, you know, Sean, Migdalia, Candido, Latinx Playwright Circle, The Greater Good, Paragones PRTT, you know.
I'm gonna tell you a story real quick, always, since the beginning. I am president of the Liza Colon Zayas fan club. Yeah. She'll tell you this. I used to iron her clothes, her costume.
Oh my gosh.
She will co-sign on this. Her and Sarah Jones were the headliners of the first New York Hip Hop Theater Festival.
Yes,
they were the first. And I was an intern that year. And, you know, Sarah Jones was in the larger space at PS122, and Liza was in the smaller space. And, you know, for whatever reason, I felt like the support wasn't there. And I didn't know Liza from Adam. I just saw her show. And it was gorgeous, and I related to the characters, and she was so sweet to me. And I made it my mission to be like, no, you will not iron your costume. I would be ironing her costume. I would be on the corner, handing out flyers. Like, the internet had just started to pop off, and, like,
yeah.
I found some friend who was, like, writing art, like, yeah. And it was just like, you know, the importance of community coming through to the show, seeing her, and just celebrating each other. That has always, you know, since I first started. And I think that had a lot to do with having an aha moment. I think that had a lot to do with coming out of NYU and not having community.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was there, I graduated in 99, and I don't know how much this stuff has changed, but I was the only Latinx person in my studio at Atlantic and in all the 3 years. Yeah.
Wow.
So it was just a lot, and like the time was a lot, and I was always having to go at it. You know what I'm saying? And we didn't have a lot of the language that we have now.
Totally. You know,
So I just remember being miserable, like not being happy, like always. And, you know, for a lot of the time, not all the time, but for a lot of the time, you know. And I remember finding, eventually, it took a little while, but, like, you know, finding the other people of color in other studios, like, mostly for whatever reason, the majority of the people of color were always in ETW. So it was like, I don't know what that's about, but it was like hanging out with the ETW kids and, like, Yeah, and then that carried over. Yeah, and that carried over into the work. And it was just like, I don't like feeling how I'm feeling in these spaces. So I'm gonna create my own spaces with my own people and do work, because I always felt like part of that training, and I understand it, I get it, and like it totally paid off, which is, you know, why I was able to, you know, I was working as an actor. But I always felt a lot of the time acting institutions is a whole not specifically. Well, I feel like they tried to strip me of all that was beautiful about me. And it took a while to unlearn that. And I, you know, in whatever capacity, I don't want to create spaces like that ever.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks can resonate with that story that you shared. So thank you. There's also something beautiful in reclaiming those parts, reclaiming those beautiful parts through the work that you're making, through the stories that you're telling, through even just the lens with which you're using theater as a social justice tool, as a tool for change, you know. And something that I also think about, which, you know, you brought up Donye and Write It Out, and the Write It Out Prize. I also, you know, I think as a queer person of color, of a certain generation, there was a real lack of mentorship, because there was a real erasure of a generation of people because of a global pandemic, right? And so there's something so beautiful about this program and about, I mean, Donye as a human being, and this sort of just peer-to-peer mentorship and community building. And I see that also as an action towards, again, finding the beautiful parts, healing those beautiful parts that maybe were broken or taken away, or we didn't have those mentors to share with us, right? And we're seeing that shift. So I wanted to sort of put that together also as you were sharing that, because there's such a beautiful web of connections in your story.
I mean, shout out to Donye. I love Donye so much. He has touched my life, and I've told him this in ways you couldn't even possibly fathom. He's a huge inspiration in terms of actually the whole trilogy idea. So I met Donye at MTC because, you know, certain organizations don't have a lot of people of color working there. So I don't think they had any, I will say this. I think I was the only gay man of color in the education department. And they were looking for someone to facilitate the Q&A for Sugar in Our Wound. So they were just like, he Puerto Rican, he'll do it. And I felt like an obligation too, even not having seen the play. I was like, all right, I have to do this, because I'm not gonna have random, you know, Lin Meadow's not gonna come through. Just, that would be weird. I met Donye right before the show. I loved him. I loved his energy. I just had this, you know, beautiful experience with it. And it was just like, it was very similar to Liza. I think I saw the show 3 times. I did a bunch of Q&As and, you know, became his biggest fan supporter. Also because he was, or is rather, just open about his status. And at that time, I wasn't. And it was through the Write It Out program, where it was, I mean, in a full disclosure, I was like, I made a bet with myself. I was like, I'm gonna win and then I'll come out. I feel it, I know it. And it was, but like legit, it was just like, I'm gonna win the prize and then I'm gonna come out, because, you know, and it was just one of those things where I knew it, and they did it, it was completely up to me. Like I got the call on Thanksgiving Day that I was gonna be the inaugural recipient. They were like, you don't have to do anything, you're not comfortable. I'm like, I'm gonna do it. This is what I said I was gonna do. And I'm gonna do it. And it's because of Danye. It's because Danye provided this space, provided the inspiration. I love you, Danye, so much.
I like that you say it's full circle, because it, and what you were saying earlier too, when it comes to even the process of creating something, it's just like, I think sometimes, or when people are early on in their career as artists, as creatives, I'll speak from my own experience. I think I thought that things were very linear, right? And that like have a natural progression, and that you do this, and these are the steps that you take to like work towards something or to like create something. And, you know, there's no room for contingency, right? That sort of thing. But listening to you talk about particularly this trilogy and how it's been developed over the course of the last, you know, couple years now at this point, I'm struck by the back and forth of it, right? You know, The War I Know has had some development time with Labyrinth as part of the Barn series. It was part of Soulfest last year. And then, as you mentioned, the Greater Good Festival with Bregones PRTT, you had the scene of Where Are Angels, that is the opening to the third play in the trilogy. So I'm just wondering, like, where how do you navigate the sort of like uncertainty of that, right? Because you have the first act of the first play, you have the first scene of the third play, and like, how do you, you know, like, where do you make the time from?
Well, I'm one of those writers. See, I'm one of those writers who, I may not spend every day, well, now I do because I'm working on it. I'm not necessarily all the time writing at the keyboard. I'm writing in my head. Like, I literally, a conversation that we had prior to, like, I had told Sean the whole idea of the first play. I was like, this is what it did. He was like, bitch, write the shit. And I was like, yeah, no. I mean, I know exactly what happens in the first, second, and the third parts. And I have stuff written for each of them. As I go, whether it's, you know, on pieces of paper ideas or, you know, the first scene or an outline. Life isn't linear. You know what I'm saying? You have to be. You gotta, you know, jump around. And like, that's one of the things that I have been, you know, because of the pandemic, and because I'm able to, like, you know, sit, you know, whether, you know, and just be, and right, I'm able to kind of talk to it more and like, and plan more and kind of think more. Whereas before, you know, I was way more scattered because I had to be, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I was always teaching, I was always auditioning or working or this and stuff. So I just feel a lot more grown. Like right now I'm not auditioning, I'm not acting. I made the choice for this amount, at least until April, just to, you know, write on the show and then write. Like, I have a very structured day. Like, before one, I'm writing on my own projects, taking care of, doing my thing, meetings, gym, et cetera. You know, the rooms from 1 to 8. And then if I have to do meetings after that or whatever, then yeah, but that's that's been my life since October. So, and it'll be till April. And then, after April, then it will open up and, you know, hopefully more things, more play things and like, yeah. So, yeah, but it's just, yeah, you gotta do it. That's part of it.
Yeah. I think one thing that in talking with so many friends, collaborators, artists, has been really sort of reflecting on the, like you brought up time, this idea of like we were given some time, right, to sort of rest, to reflect, to reckon with shit, right? And now, as we're in this sort of new normal, you know, whatever they say, and we're returning to a kind of work, you know, you mentioned structure. A structured day. I'm curious, how else have you been navigating this sort of need for finding that balance. Because I think that's something I think about now, you know, being back in a rehearsal and the like the evening calls, the daily, you know, and the sort of, oh, that's right, like I have to put on pants today, you know. And it is, though, I think there is this idea of like, well, we got to experience what life was like when we could slow down, when we could. And I say that from a place of deep privilege, in circumstances. But as we're now going back in, yeah, there's this question, or at least a question that I'm wrestling with. So it's sort of a selfish question, is that idea of like balance, you know? I don't want to go back to that sort of burnt out lifestyle. I don't want to be feeling run down and ragged and artistically drained, you know? And so again, you mentioned structure, you mentioned being able to structure your day, being able to set boundaries, like I'm not going to be auditioning for this time. This is the period I'm going to focus on this. I'm curious, what else? Like, what else have you found as a way to create that balance for yourself, or not?
So, meditation was always a thing for a while, but it became a thing. Like, it really has, like, during the pandemic, and it's all virtual now. So, you know, shout out to Heal House. Heal House is the space, and you know, $20 a month. Like, it's unlimited, like weekly meditation. They have meditation classes all day, yoga shit. So I'm just like, so that's helpful. Reading, I spoke about that healer that I was gifted a session with, that she has been really instrumental. You know, I work with her, you know, I would say quarterly therapy is important. Just making time for me, because if my cup isn't full, I can't give it, you know. You know, I'm also the person, I'm not out in these streets. I'm not out at the club. Like, I'm still very much, you know, and with privilege, with this has been a privilege, especially now because I'm able to write, you know, and get paid for it from home. Just even in that, knowing that if I'm not doing my best, if I feel like, oh, I gotta stay up and get this done, you know, I feel like sometimes we think we like, or I'll speak in the eye, I feel like I used to, with, you know, where busyness is like a badge of honor, and like, it's like bullshit. It's like, no, why, fuck, no. You know, sometimes you gotta say no, you know, or not. It'll get done when it's gonna get done. You know what? If this outline isn't done or whatever by tomorrow, this, the world's still gonna go on. You know what I'm saying? But if you give yourself that time more often, or for me, I know when I give myself that time, if I need to, you know, watch Drag Race or Pornhub or whatever it is that my body honor it, do what you gotta do, and then it'll come. Yeah. And then it'll come. And yeah.
Yeah. And
that's, oh, and my gosh. That is the most real thing I've ever heard, probably.
Oh, well, Pornhub, don't get over and OnlyFans, child. Oh.
Business is booming.
Like I said, I took COVID very seriously. I was not out in these streets. Mm-hmm. I was, you know. But, you know, child, some people benefited off of that shit.
I mean, talk about, you know, taking your career into your own hands. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny, actually, I was just talking to a dear, dear friend of mine, Alex Mela, and we were talking about that. You know, even the idea of like calling it procrastination, right? Like, we're sitting here going like, oh, I'm procrastinating. Well, what if we actually just acknowledged, I need a break? And instead of living in the mindset of I'm procrastinating and punishing yourself, you live in the mindset of I'm gonna give myself the break that I need. I'm gonna go watch whatever you need to watch. And then I'm gonna come back. Right. And I think that there is a mental shift there that I, like, you know, she said this and I was like, it was such an aha. And I think this is what you're speaking to, of actually like, and that's that grace that you mentioned, you know, that grace with oneself to sort of say, I am human. This is where mm-hmm. I'm at. I'm going to give myself a break right now, and then I'm going to come back to it, and it will get done, right? But it's not worth, exactly as you said, going into that sort of busy mentality where that means I'm doing it right, but rather mm-hmm. like allowing yourself to be a whole human being, you know?
Yeah.
And doing it without shame.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Because I think sometimes like we'll attach shame to it, like at the like we'll involuntarily, you know, involuntarily give ourselves that time to watch whatever we want to watch. But then we're like, oh my God, I should be doing this. Oh my God.
Right.
And then you're not really enjoying the moment. Like yeah. just be in the moment, give your body what it needs to, and then, you know, it will reward you for it later.
Absolutely.
That's like a beautiful, that I feel like we just had this like decolonizing moment of mentality and just the way that the both of you expressed yeah. that, because the idea of like not punishing yourself, the idea of procrastination, right? And that guilt, that shame, you're like, oh, I should be. And sort of eliminating your humanity from it rather than saying like, actually my body is telling me my, you know, I'm receiving signals from the actual like vessel that I'm mm-hmm. existing in, that I am feeling overwhelmed and overworked and just like exhausted from the world that's happening around me. And I need to prioritize my humanity before I can prioritize capitalism. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I hope that like if whoever's listening takes anything away from the conversation among all the other nuggets that have already been shared, that that's like something that they really like take into the forefront of their mind, you know? And I think it's crucial for, you know, this idea of the revolution that yeah. is mm-hmm. Among us, the great, you know, resignation and such, the great rest.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, I don't, whatever it is, like, I don't want to go back to whatever pre-2020 was.
Yeah.
Like that, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't serve us, you know, so.
Yeah. As we're coming sort of winding down in the conversation, you know, I'm curious, what do you want to see? Either for yourself, for the community, for the field, like what do you want to see that you haven't seen?
More representation, not just on stage or, you know, in film and TV, but on an executive level. I want to see it in the studio system. I want to see it, you know, on Broadway in terms of producers, like non-creatives as well. Like, I feel like everyone's like, oh, like, yeah, create, we are most important, but like shit ain't really, really changing until like the people who are signing the checks mm-hmm. and are changed. And it's just like, so more executive leadership, more representation in executive leadership, you know? Yeah, because it is over, like I was having this conversation earlier today, you know, cause you do meetings like, you know, in TV, like with networks and stuff like that. I think I've met two network executives that have been POC.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, and we're there like, you know, the creative side there, but like top of the food chain, mm-hmm. who can really, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing, is just like, so people can really like, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's when we're really gonna see stuff yeah. change. So I can't wait
yeah.
to see that, you know?
Yeah, well, it's a, you know, it's the gatekeepers, you know, it's the,
yeah,
it's
yeah, that's
the
yeah.
people who can say yes to the bigger resources, mm-hmm. to the bigger opportunities, right. and who will maybe allow the creatives more agency in the stories that they're telling, right? And yeah. and more sort of truthfulness, because they're being understood on a deeper level. And that's not to say that one can't, right? But I hear you, like there is, and again, it's not to say like the ones in power, you know, because that, and also there is a kind of hierarchy there, but it is, yeah, it's those movers and shakers who can really make a real impact now, because the talent is there. And I hear what it's like, it's the creators are there, right? Now it's just for people to say like, let's do it.
Let's do it. Yeah, because so much of that, like, it influences everything. It really does. Like the same script that got on the blacklist went through so many white people's hands. And it was like, oh my God, you're a great writer. I don't know how to sell this. I don't know how to do this, whatever. But the people behind the blacklist and the Latinx list were all POC.
Yeah.
You know, were great working in the industry. And it took them to kind of, that me getting on that list really changed everything.
Yeah.
Because then it opened, and then even with my team, like with my manager, you know, on the literary side, like I met with a bunch of people, but like she's Puerto Rican from Brooklyn. And she called me the day after the list came. She's like, listen, you're gonna meet with so many people, but you're signing with me.
Yes.
All right, lady. You know, but it was one of those. But like, she gets me.
Yeah.
And like, she gets me. And I don't have to like what like. There's a shorthand. Mm-hmm. Like so. Like, and that's the thing. It's just like, and we are all in community. Like in terms of like, everyone's holding doors when people coming through. When you know, pressing the you know button for the escalator. We're all there. Like everyone's got a community, but. What you said, what I want to see, like, as we move forward, is us, like, because then it just, I really feel like that's where we're going to really see massive change. Like, the changes happen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not what it was 20 years ago when we had Oz. Just Oz, and we had, like, Third Watch, and that's, you know. Now it's like, you know, we're creating the shows. You know, oftentimes those shows are getting canceled, but who's canceling them shows? Yeah. You know, so.
Right.
Yeah.
It's changing. It's changed. There's still a lot more work to do. A lot more work to do. You know, we can. It's happening. We can do it. And yeah.
I
just got to keep on keeping on.
It is heartening to see, and I feel like that the change does. Okay, I won't say that because I don't exist in that world yet. But like in the world of the screen, you know, TV and film, at least as a watcher at the moment. Looking at credits, I'm like obsessively like looking at credits constantly nowadays, and just being able to see that like someone isn't just like the writer or head writer or creator, but they're also the EP, and they're also like people like Michaela Cole, right? Like having the agency over an incredible TV show like I May Destroy You, and being able to make the decisions of like this, you know, we're gonna have a certified like therapist on set for these people, for folks. We're gonna make sure that we have like intimacy coordination that is a top priority, and for her to make those calls as the not only the person who like is writing this thing, but also being able to produce the experience of making it for the people who are making it, and centering care like that. And so, you know, I'll say that it sounds like stuff like that happens quicker or gets pushed through quicker or more efficiently in the world of screen. I obviously don't know, but
I mean, it definitely feels. I mean, in my experience, it feels that way. Like I'm like, y'all. It feels to me in the world of theater. You know, you have a lot of old school heads who ain't trying to let shit go.
Yeah.
You know, they're holding on to that to dear life, you know. That's how it feels to me. And I think in my experience, I've seen the willingness to kind of, that is not perfect by any means, but sometimes I feel like in theater, it's just like, yo, what are we doing? Like, come on, y'all. Like, we got
get up to speed.
Yeah.
But, you know, we praying, keep praying and doing.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And hopefully we catch up.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And just
But we have amazing people like the Soul Projects and y'all, and you know, who are creating change. You know.
Thank you for that. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, just hearing you say that idea of like, you know, scripts passing through hands and hearing that phrase, which I think we often hear is like, oh, I don't know what to do with this. To me, it's a lack of imagination, right? And I think what we all need now as we are navigating the biggest uncertainty of a world, right, is a greater imagination, I think, you know, great to give these artists like yourself who are carving out paths for stories to be told that are healing, that are shaping culture, the agency to be able to tell those stories. And like you said, to be able to not just have a cute little reading of it, but to be able to get in there, dig into it with a team, realize it, you know, and take those quote unquote risks on artists, because I think we all want it. I want it, you know, like I think the audience, like we see it, like we are hungry for more truth and more imagination. So it is, so stop procrastinating. No, just kidding. No, I'm just messing with you.
It's just, you know, no, don't stop procrastinating.
I'm messing with you. No.
Just keep, I would like to say this. Keep, I don't know if belief is, but just, One, I will say this. Somebody told me one day, and they were like, Dominic, you have such faith. And it's just like, one of the things that I have always known is that no matter what, I'm gonna be great. Like, it's always gonna work out. It's always gonna work out. In the darkest days, even like when everything was telling me it wasn't gonna be great, I still had the faith. I had $237 at the beginning of in my bank account in the beginning of the pandemic. $237 when I was dealing with fucking craziness of unemployment and this, that. But it was like, no matter what, it was unshakable. And it was just, you know, the money comes, all of that comes, the opportunity comes, but it's just like, you gotta trust that shit. You know, even when the world's telling you no, you gotta trust it.
Absolutely. And find a community of people who will tell you yes and. Mm-hmm. And push you and support you and create those spaces, like you said, that are safe and brave and give you the agency to decide how you want your story to unfold.
Yeah, and have that core people. Not everybody has to be this, but like also other people be like, no, girl, take that
totally. Oh my God. Absolutely.
Get the you yes people who will say no. But you also gotta we need a couple people to be like, no, girl.
Yes.
No.
Yes, totally. Well, it's the yes and yes. No.
Yes.
Yeah. And no. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
My goodness.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Dominic.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I love it. Yes. I can't believe it's over. That's so crazy. Time.
We have it. What is it?
Before we let you go, can you please let our followers know where they can keep up with you and your work?
I'm very simple. At my name. At Dominic Colon, DominicColon.
Thank you again so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me. I love y'all so much.
And we'll be right back. Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back. We just wrapped up our interview with Dominic Colon. Yeah, I just feel like at the end there, we just like really got, it really started to like pick up at the end. And I feel like that's the case a lot of the time where we're like, we start, you know, we have like our little like, how are you, you know, talk to us about what's going on, da, 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 da. And then right at the time where we start to like wrap up is when we're really getting into the meat of it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's always such a great time chatting with Dominic. I just feel like so real, so honest, so, generous, like such a generous human being and an artist. So what a rich conversation. And truly, I couldn't think of someone that better things should be coming to, you know. And what incredible work for folks who were able to be at SoulFest this past year, both digitally and in person. We did an in-person reading of the first act of The War I Know. And it still resonates with me, just such an explosive and honest and highly theatrical piece of work. You know, I think that's really exciting as an artist who is able to really write for the theater, you know, to keep that sort of theatrical sensibility, and hearing him talk about all three of the plays in the trilogy, it has an expansiveness that is so rich for the theater. And I'm so excited to see the others and you know, to continue supporting the development of these pieces. So so keep on the lookout. If you didn't get to see it, hopefully it'll be coming around soon, another opportunity.
Yeah, if y'all, and actually, if y'all want to hear him talk a little bit more about the trilogy itself and dig a little deeper, he does touch on it a little bit in the announcement of him being the inaugural recipient of Write It Out. Dominic did an interview with Danye, interview.
Yes.
So that's on National Queer Theater's YouTube channel. And there's like there's a special intro from Javier Munoz, who apparently like went to college with Dominic. I'm just like, I love that relationship exists in the world. And circle. Also the Greater Good Festival is available on YouTube as well, where they had Where Are Our Angels, the short play that he wrote that is actually the first opening scene of the third play in the trilogy.
Amazing.
That includes The War I Know. So y'all can like tune into those things to hear a little bit more and like get a little bit more of a taste of what is to come.
A little teaser, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you all so much again for joining us for another episode of Soul Talk. This is our second to last episode of season 3.
Not the penultimate, right?
And it's not.
That's next one.
That is the next one.
Penultimate.
I love seeing the hesitation in your face for a second.
I was like, second to last. No, that doesn't mean the same thing as penultimate. Yeah, yeah. Or second to last. I don't know what you said, but it's not the penultimate. That one's coming next.
Yes, yes. So make sure you stay tuned, and we will be bringing it to you very soon. Thank you all for listening. Until next time. Soul Talk is a branch of the Soul Project, a national theater initiative dedicated to producing the work of Latinx playwrights in New York City and beyond. Co-hosted by David Mendizabal and Joey Reyes. Edited by Iris Zacarias. You can follow us at www.soulproject.org, on Instagram and Twitter at Soul Project NYC, and on Facebook at The Soul Project. Thank you for listening.